good afternoon. So, last time, we started looking at how to take the components we discussed. We started with having registers and muxes and just general computational circuits, and using that to build some simple processors that do some of our instructions. We started by looking at, okay, we had sort of knock and halt, where we apply this idea that, oh, we can use a mux to decide to do one thing on knock to tell the simulator to keep going, and another thing on halt to tell the simulator not to keep going. And we apply that same principle towards what's the next instruction we want to run. And we tell the next instruction we want to run by looking at our PC register in the next cycle. So our input to the PC register was controlled by a mux, and that let us decide to run different instructions. And our first example of this was with nop and jump. With nop, the next instruction to run is the current instruction address plus 1. With jump, we have to look at the output of the instruction memory and get the address that's in that machine code and send it back to the program counter register. So then we started looking at, well, you know, our interesting instructions, they work with registers or memory, so where and how are we going to store those? And we're going to have sort of pre-built components for that. So for the register file, you could do this yourself. You could just define a bunch of registers and add some control logic to decide when you write to one or read from one. But that's going to be done for you, partly just to save you time, and partly because this would be a component that someone who specializes in electrical engineering can design more efficiently than sort of our naive way might look. And partly because we want to be able to grade your assignments, and it's really handy to know what registers are, so having you do this yourself would be annoying for me writing grading scripts. So we have this pre-supplied register file, which has what I call read ports and write ports. So read ports are for reading, and write ports are for writing. And we learned that our textbook author's choice was that our register file would have two read ports and two write ports, meaning we could read two things at once and write two things at once. And the read ports have this input, which gives us an index of a register, which would typically be a value we'd fetch from the instruction. And in a corresponding output, it gives us the value at that register, or the 64-bit value currently stored. And our write ports take an index of a register again, which usually would come from an instruction, and also a value to store in that register. And like our normal, just plain old register, the actual write is going to happen at the rising edge of the clock, and we'll have one big climbing clock signal to decide when that happens. And something we needed here is, well, you know, not all our instructions update registers. So a feature the register file would have for us is that we could specify a special register number of 15, known as regnon in HTLRS if you want to not write 15, for don't write anything. And without this, you know, the register file would write something every cycle. And maybe we could deal with this. We could just always write back the same value we just read, but it's much more convenient to have this feature, and so they added it. So we could easily implement instructions that don't modify any registers, like nop. So then we talked about a data memory. So we were looking at implementing an instruction like MRMoveQ. MRMoveQ needs to read from memory. And you might look at our processor and say, yeah, I can read from memory. We have an instruction memory. It reads from memory. That should work. And it would. The problem is that if we want to implement every instruction in one cycle, which is what we're doing now, then in order to implement MRMoveQ, we'd first need to read the MRMoveQ instruction, and then we'd need to read the value it specifies. And we'd have to do those in separate cycles, because, you know, if our instruction memory is reading one value, then near that rising edge of the clock, it's going to have that address as input and have that value as its stable output. And it can't have a second value also as its stable output. So it can only read one thing per cycle. So our solution was a second data memory. And we mentioned, you know, preview of future attractions. We're going to have these memories actually really be the same, just two interfaces to the same memory, which we'll learn will be actually caches. But we have the second data memory, and this supports reading in the same kind of way our instruction memory did. We input an address, and in the same cycle, before that rising edge of the clock, we get the value at that address. It also supports writing. And writing works kind of like registers. We input the address to write to and the value to write, and like a register, at the rising edge of the clock, that value will be stored at that address. Something which is a bit different than how our register file worked, because otherwise this kind of looks like a register file, is that rather than controlling when we read or write sort of with register numbers, so for reading, the register file always read, our data memory won't always read, it has this read enable signal, and for writing, our data memory won't always write, but rather than specifying some magic address which is invalid, we have a special write enable signal. And why did our textbook authors choose one thing for register file for enabling writes versus one thing for our data memory? I don't know, it seems like a bad idea. But that's what they chose. So using these components, we discussed building a CPU for doing adds, adds nops, and move to register instructions, and I believe in this section we went on to just general move instructions briefly. And sort of the key idea we had when doing this is we said, okay, here's a processor, let's implement our first instruction. Maybe it's add, maybe it's nop. And then when we went to add an instruction, sort of my strategy was, okay, I'm gonna look at what this instruction wants to do by itself and see where I have a conflict. Like, am I putting one value into the register file for one instruction and another one for the other? If so, my solution is add a mux and make the right choice for each instruction to make that work out. And we'll look at kind of another way of looking at things where instead of going instruction by instruction, we'll go kind of component by component, but we'll have the same idea. We're going to kind of enumerate through what each instruction does to build our processor and handle all the instructions we want to. So before I move on and review some things with move, questions about things we covered last time. Yes?
Could you quickly explain the differences from the memory and register?
Can I explain the difference between the memory and the register file? So the register file looks very much like just a memory that accesses some other space, right? And as far as how reads and writes work, the timing is the same. The way we specify not to write is different. For the memory, data memory, we specify not to write by setting this write bit control signal to 0. For the register file, we have to set the register number to this special 15 value. Another difference is the register file. Well, we can read two things at once and write two things at once. For the data memory, we can only do one operation at a time. And we kind of have to choose whether that's a read or a write each time. The other big difference, of course, is how we specify kind of addresses. So memory addresses are addresses of bytes in this big array of bytes. Register indices are just 0 through 14. And that's it. And there's no overlap between 0 and 1, unlike in memory, where if you get 8 bytes from address 0 and get 8 bytes from address 1, well, 7 of those bytes are going to be in common. But with the register file, of course, they're completely independent. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So last time we had finishing up with this adding all our move instructions. So here we have move to register and move to something else. And I was going through my process I mentioned earlier of I look at this and I say, what does this instruction I want to add want to do? So I have the first three instructions implemented, want to add the next one, say, what does this want to do? And I say, okay, so it wants to write into no register. So we want to have this input here be reg none. And it wants to write into memory RA, so we want to have the data in for memory connected to RA, and we want to enable writing. And that's how I reason about what this instruction needs to do. So another way you can think of it is that like I kind of like quickly kind of figured out what would a processor that only does this instruction look like, and then tried to merge that in. And I said, oh, I have this conflict here for DESD, where I want to do two different things for DESD. And I have this conflict here for memwrite bit, where I want to do two different things. So we're going to have muxes for both of those. And we ended up with this design. And I believe I mentioned last time that our textbook authors have, they do things actually differently for this, which is that they use DESDEM. That's for the other instruction. So but this is what our textbook authors also have DESDEM. For DESDEM, we need to supply regnon 2, just like we do here. So questions about our final move CPU from last time? So we just to go from move to register to general move is we need to say, oh, this last move instruction doesn't write to a register, so we need reg none. And we also need a way to send the write value to data memory and enable writing. And only enable writing for this R move Q. We don't want to write for the other instructions. Okay, so something to note about this is that there's a bunch of stuff in this picture which kind of isn't about like what the instruction's doing, but is sort of control logic for the construction. And commonly, you're going to see these two terms, data path and control path. So data path are the signals that carry like the actual data, the values of registers, the values of memory addresses, the values from memory or going to memory, sort of what we think of as the values the instruction's working on. We also have control path, which are these signals that control things like muxes. And that's a big part of our processor. And this isn't like a hard line, because, for example, let's think of a conditional jump instruction, jump if less than. So for jump is less than, we have some sort of mux, which is going to decide whether to take the PC to where the jump goes or just to the next instruction. And that's kind of part of the control path, but it's kind of part of the data path by some perspectives, because we're like dealing with the condition codes, and that logic seems like it's part of the data path, maybe. So that's a fuzzy line. And unfortunately, if you read like people who write about computer architecture, they will use the term control path with kind of not having a firm delimitation on like, is that like how much of that logic that makes conditional jumps work, how much of that is control path versus data path. They won't have a firm line on that. But there's some stuff which is definitely data path, like the signals like that carry all our register values for add and so on. That's definitely the data path. And in future drawings, things are going to get more complicated. So I'm often not going to draw the control path. I've already kind of abstracted it a lot, as you can see in red, sort of our control path here. And I'm often just not going to draw it at all. It's going to have to be there. So you'll see a mux without any selector input. That just means that, you know, it's going to be based on something that we're not showing just for, you know, space reasons. And this is also very common in how you'll see processors drawn in sort of the literature for computer architecture. They'll often not show the control path. They'll show this data path. So questions about control path versus data path? Yeah.
The definitions for both use the word signals.
Yes.
Is that referring to just like wires that carry electricity? Is that what?
So the question is, when I say signals, does that refer to wires that carry electricity? That would be the implementation in something that's built with electronics. I mean, if we imagine a processor is built with other technologies, like, you know, light or something, it would be signals built, made in some other way that they still carry values. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so we have our processor here, and our textbook authors have this more systematic way of thinking about how to build up this processor, and they've divided it into something they call stages. Now, I don't really like their terminology, because when you think of stages, you say, okay, so that means that the way this processor works is that the first stage happens, and then the second stage happens, and then the third stage happens, and that's not how it is. In this processor, you might, if we think of when does this plus 2 happens, it happens when you can get the value. When does this data memory read happen, it happens when we can get the address coming in here. When does the data memory write happen, it happens at the end of the clock cycle, because that's how the data memory works. So the timing of these components is dictated by sort of how this circuit is set up, like what's connected to what and what depends on the clock signal. It's not dictated by how we're going to divide it up into stages, as our textbook author says them. So what our textbook author calls stages at this point, I think would be better called just, you know, parts or something like that. Question back there?
The component for the byte register file is the memory, correct?
The component, sorry? What is the component to the right of the register file? This?
No, to the right.
This?
Up the other right.
Oh, right. Directions. This?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's an adder because we need to compute D plus RB for the move instructions.
No, like the data in, data out.
Oh, what is... Okay, what is this? The question is, what's this box? That is the data memory, which I didn't label, so I had space to label all its signals. Other questions? Okay, so our textbook author is going to divide this up into stages, but I think they're more likely just called parts. And you might say, why do they use the term stages? And they had a good reason, which is that after we talk about building this processor, which is what our textbook calls a single cycle processor, one where every instruction executes in one cycle, and when that cycle has its rising edge, we start executing the next instruction. So we're going to move on from that design to something called a pipeline design. And in that design, these stages are actually going to have meaning as stages, that we're going to do one stage, then the next, and that's going to be a real thing. But right now, we're not there yet. So right now, what our textbook calls stages are just, we're dividing up the circuit into pieces so we can kind of work on one piece at a time. But later on, we'll make these pieces more real. And this is roughly how our textbook divides things up into stages. You might have some complaints. So, but the reason they've chosen these stages is because later on when we talk about pipelining, these will be a convenient way of dividing up the processor. So right now, there are some, you know, if we're just thinking of dividing things up for convenience, there's some suspect decisions here. So let's go through the stages. So we have our fetch stage. So the fetch stage is where we fetch an instruction. That makes sense. It's also where we deal with computing the address of the next instruction. So this is like what's after it. You might say, so this is where we handle jumps? No, this is the address of the following instruction. If we're handling jumps, there's a separate decision later on about whether we use the address of the next instruction or something else, like the constant from the instruction or a value from memory for return, whether we use something like that to get set our next PC. In the PC update step we'll get to in a bit. So we have fetch, we read an instruction, and compute the address of the next instruction by incrementing the PC, sort of what you did in the lab yesterday. Then we have decode, and you think decode, that's where we split up the instruction. Nope, that's what we did in fetch. Decode is where we read registers. You might say, that's a horrible name. I'm sorry, our textbook isn't the only one who calls this state part of the processor where we read registers decode. They probably shouldn't, but that's what our textbook is using the term for. So decode is reading some registers. Then we have execute. So execute is where we perform the main computation operation. In the case of this move CPU, that's the address computation. If we had an add instruction, that would be the add, would be there too. That's the execute stage. Then we have the memory stage, is where we access the data memory. So we're either doing a read or a write. And then we have the write back stage, where we set up the register file to write a value, and so to do that, write back of a register result, or nothing in the case of instructions that don't run any registers, effectively. As I said, this is a conceptual division of an instruction. So one example in which this kind of doesn't work is that it looks like memory is a stage before write back, but the memory write's going to happen at the end of the clock cycle, because that's how the data memory works, even though it's before in our list of stages. And finally, we have this PC update stage. So for our move instructions, it's always just advanced to the next instruction. But if we made some other decision, like jumping somewhere or returning somewhere, this is where we would do it. So this gives us our list of stages. Questions about these stages, this conceptual division of the instructions work that our textbook authors have made? Okay, not seeing any questions, so here's a question for you. Give you a minute or two, you can chat with your neighbors. And I guess if it helps, a reminder of how the push queue instruction works. So the push queue instruction will update the stack pointer to point to an address that is 8 lower, subtracting 8 from it. And at that location, it will store a value that is its argument, in this case, RAX. Okay, who'd like some more time? No one thinks they... Okay, so let's see who thinks A, B, C, a couple people, D, majority answer it looks like, E. If few people. F, something else. Okay. So I think the best answer here is B. So something needs to explain. So our processor design we're working with is a single cycle design. So we only have one rising edge of the clock cycle for every instruction. So if we're going to both write to a register and write to memory and write to the PC, do all three of those, then the time that those writes actually happen is based on that rising edge of a clock signal, and we only have one to use. So we better make sure they all happen at the same time, because we don't have any other options without making instructions take more cycles, which is not the design we're going for. So if we were going for a design where we made some instructions take multiple cycles, yeah, they could happen at different times, but no, they can't. Now, an important distinction here is that there's a difference between when the values change and when we compute what they're changing to. So we're clearly going to compute the value that RSP changes to before we write to RSP. And in fact, if we think about what this instruction does, you know, we are going to make, so new RSP is going to be RSP minus 8, and memory at new RSP is going to be the value from RAX. So to make this work, if these are both changing at the same time, what's going to happen is that we're going to have to send this value RSP minus 8 here. This is going to be sent to the register file and the data memory. To the data memory, so we know where to write, to the register file, so we know what to update RSP to. So we're going to send that value two places rather than actually writing it to RSP first and then reading it back from RSP into the data memory, because it's not going to be written in time. So that's what we're going to have to do with this, just because of how our components work, that we have one rising edge of the clock signal, and that's when everything happens. So if we think of our instruction execution, you know, we have our clock signal going on. And so here, at the beginning of the clock cycle, that's where we got the PC for the current instruction. Once we get that, we can start reading, you know, we can read our instruction memory. We can do our instruction read. And once we've done our instruction read, we can access the register file. And once we've accessed the register file, we can compute those values and set up for the write of the register file and the PC and the data memory, and so on. But those writes are not actually going to happen until they're triggered by this rising edge of the clock. Yes, we'll be ready for them before then, and we'll have to make our clock cycle long enough so that happens, but the writes won't actually happen until they're triggered by that rising edge. So the values won't change. We'll just be ready to change them beforehand. So questions, comments? Yes.
So the
question, would the order still be 1, 2, 3, 4, but 2, 3, and 4 all happen in the same clock rate? So the event which triggers 2, 3, and 4 is this common clock signal. We share one clock signal on the whole processor. So there's no reason to say that any of them happen in any particular order other than that they're triggered by the same event. So that's why I said at almost the same time. I think it's better than in any order. And we certainly don't have enough information to know that one would happen before the other. If we're like talking about like the microscopic like variance in who gets the clock signal first or whatever, we don't have any information to like know what that would look like. Does that answer your question? Other questions? I'm a little surprised because this is always a point of a huge amount of confusion. Yes?
And the question where it asks which is computed first, then, or what's the order in which that was computed, the answer would be D.
So the question is, if it was asking about the order in which things are computed, the answer would be, what do you say? B?
D.
D as in delta. So this is a little tricky because for changing memory, there's two things we have to compute. We have to compute the address at which to change memory and the value to put in memory. And I'd argue that it seems likely that the value to put in memory we compute much earlier than we compute the new value of RSP because we get it from the register file and just we got it. Whereas the address to change memory at, we have to do the computation of RSP for. And that kind of gives you an argument that we get them both at the same time, right? Because it's the same value for the one that's going to take the longest, it's the same value. And as for 4, the PC changing, I think that's likely to happen earlier. It's not guaranteed. But if we think about our circuit here, we can do this sort of computation here before we access the register file. So it's probably going to happen as we're accessing the register file. So the way we think of things working electrically is that values flow to the next place, and once, say, that +2 and that mux have their inputs, they just start working, and they take some amount of time. And the same is true of our register file. Once it has its inputs of what registers to read, it starts working. And it seems like with this design, those two things are going to happen at the same time. And the register file seems more complicated than this PC update, so I would guess that the PC update value would be computed earlier. Does that answer your question? Other questions? So question, in our single cycle design, I could put this in multiple different orders. So part of the ordering I asked for here, as I said, the instruction read, right? We kind of have to read the instruction to access the correct register. So like that order is kind of defined by just how the instruction works. And there's a bunch of those in our processor. Like, you know, we can't do the PC update before we read the instruction. We can't do this addition here or the before we read the register file. So there's some ordering which is imposed by what the instruction does. There's some which isn't. So certainly, depending on how I build this circuit, you know, whether this PC update value is computed before this place to read the memory, that's going to depend on just the choices I made electrically in designing the circuit. Just which one is faster. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, other questions, follow-ups? Okay. So, with this caveat that right now our stages are these sort of fake things, and the timing is really based on sort of that electrical dependence and what happens at the rising edge of the clock, we're going to look at our textbook's division, and we're going to look at this as a tool for helping us build our processor systematically without getting overwhelmed with all the instructions and all the parts of the processor, which is going to get pretty complicated when we add all the features it's supposed to support. So the first stage our textbook talks about is instruction fetch. So this is where they say we read the instruction memory and we split it up. I'm using on these slides the textbook's names for these signals. You don't have to use these names. Some of these names are pretty bad. Like VALP probably could be better named. VALC probably could be better named. But the signals our textbook note has of note is I-code, which is the primary opcode, the one which tells you if like it is not halt, opq, and so on. And I-fun is the secondary opcode. So I-fun is, so for, this is for opq, this is it add, sub, etc. And for C move and J jump, this is what condition? That's iFun. So named because of function code is the a common name in the literature for that sort of secondary opcode. We have RA and RB, which are the register numbers from the instruction. Or if you know, the instruction doesn't have register numbers, just some junk after the instruction, or within the instruction. And valc, which is the constant from the instruction, so for moves, it's the displacement, or the constant. And for calls, it's the target of the call, or, you know, same for jumps. The jumper call, target address. And this is also conceptually where we compute the address of the next instruction. And by next instruction, I mean the one that follows in assembly. So that's the PC plus the length of the instruction. This is not necessarily the instruction we'll execute next, but we still want this value around for other reasons. So that's why we're computing it in this sort of first step in our author's design, is because if we think of, for example, a call instruction, the return address, that's valp. We think of a conditional jump. Well, we want to decide later on between valc and valp as far as what the next PC should be. So we just compute this valp regardless, and usually it's what we'll set the PC to, but there's some exceptions. So that gives us something that visually looks like this. Questions? So we have our instruction fetch, and then our next stage is instruction decode. I use scare quotes around decode because probably this should be called register read, but our textbook authors decided not to do that. So this is where we read registers, and our textbook authors call the outputs of the register file val A and val B, the two registers we write. And the simplest way you might think of, okay, I want to add that to my processor. Well, I got RA and RB in the previous stage and from instruction fetch. Let's just use those. So let's just hook them up. RA to source A, RB to source B. So we have our val A and val E coming out of the register file as the two registers from the instruction. And if you did this, you'd be, you know, not quite done, because there's some instructions you'd have problems with. So which of these, give you a minute or two, you can discuss with your neighbors, which of these have I made a mistake? So by made a mistake here, I mean, which of these, you know, is there something wrong with what I've already hooked up? Obviously, like, I'm missing some features here. Like, I need to hook something up to the PC. But as long as I could hook something up that makes this work, that's fine, right? So for jump, like, it's not a problem that I'm computing this address and not the one I need, because I can hook either of them up to here, like with a mux. But there's some instructions where even if we add muxes and so on, we're already in trouble. So which of those, of these instructions, are in that category? Where, you know, we can't draw more things on this and still implement that instruction. We've already have something we need to, like, change. question? It's possible that there are between anything from zero to all of them on the list that are correct. Who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we have a problem with not? Okay, a few people. Who thinks we have a problem with add? Okay, who thinks we'd have a problem with MR move Q? Okay, a few. R move Q. Also a few. Jump. Okay, a lot. Push. Lesser. Okay, so first let's talk about the issue of reading registers we aren't using. So I think there's it's reasonable to say, okay, if we're not using a register, we should pass that special register none value to the register file. That's a reasonable thing to do, and if you do that in your assignments, that's perfectly fine. But it's not necessary. If we read a register and get a value out of our register file of that register that we don't care about, as long as we don't do anything important with that value, it's not a problem. So I don't think there's any issue with nop or at nop or mRemoveQ or rRemoveQ, because yes, we're reading registers we don't care about for nop and mRemoveQ. Yes, we're reading registers we don't care about, but that's not going to do anything as long as we wire up the rest of this circuit correctly to not use those values we read that don't correspond to anything. And that also applies to jump. So for jump, we don't need to read a register to figure out what to do, but if we read these registers and don't use them, it's fine. For add, what do we want to do? We want to read two registers, add them together, and store the result in a register. It seems to me like all we've decided to do here is read two registers. So that's consistent with what we want to do for add. We can extend the circuit to have the rest of add's functionality here without any problems. I don't think there's any issue with add, and I think the same thing for our rMoveQ. Right, we still have room to not write to registers we don't care about, just connect things to the data memory and so on. So that shouldn't be a problem. So that's everything but push. So questions about any of the issues, but why there's no problem with things that aren't push? Yes?
How do we define val c?
That is a good question. So do you think there's an issue with val c? So you're saying, okay, val c is used for different things,
yeah.
And that was your issue. So I don't think that's an issue because we can have a mux that val c and other stuff go into, right? We still have room to draw that.
Okay.
So I agree, yes, val c is going to be used for multiple things, but we still have space to add that circuit. And that's, in fact, something we're going to do. Okay, other questions, comments? Okay, so then we have push, and I think push, we would have a problem. And it's not because push uses one register and we're reading two. That's not the issue. The problem is that push needs the value of the stack pointer. And where is the stack pointer's value sitting? It's sitting in the register file. We have RSP. It's stored in there, and we have to get it out, or else we can't do the push instruction. So how do we get RSP out of the register file? We better pass the register index for RSP to one of these source ports, source wires. And if we look at the encoding of the push instruction, well, we're passing the register we want to push as RA. So like if it's push RAX, that would be RA. And RB is hard-coded to OXF or REG9. So with what I have wired up here, I'm not getting RSP out. I'm getting the register we want to push and zero. So I need to fix that. Yes.
Would a better design of the instruction set be, instead of having it hard coded to F, be hard coded to rectifiers, the number in the register file?
Question is, would a better instruction set design have put a the register number of RSP there? So that is in fact that is a reasonable thing to do and would make our implementation easier. And you could imagine kind of extending that to have push instead of being a sort of always the stack pointer, it'd be push on using any register you want as a stack pointer. And that's something that you'll see some instruction sets do that sort of thing. As for whether that's practical, I guess, yeah. So that would be something that would be kind of practical to extend YD6 with, except we'd have to deal with the return instruction, which currently is encoded with 1 byte and doesn't have space for a register number. But other than that, you know, that would be simpler, but that's not what our textbook authors chose. So, and I guess in the call instruction, you'd also have to deal with the call instruction, which also doesn't have space for a stack pointer, register index. So those instructions, you know, that wouldn't be quite the solution, but unless we made the instructions bigger. So we have all our stack instructions, push, call, pop, return, where the solution that our textbook has, you know, used, rather than changing the instruction set to put the RSP in there, we're going to have to deal with that ourselves. So we're going to have a mux that, you know, has the option to put RSP into source B. And if you like passing regnon for instructions that don't read memory, you could absolutely do that with this mux too. Or, so don't read registers, rather. By passing regnon for instructions that don't read registers or don't leave the second register, you can do that. And notice that there's this technique I used here of just kind of listing out the instructions and saying, okay, this instruction, what registers does it use? What registers should I read for it, rather, to make it work? And I just systematically went through all the instructions doing that. And this is sort of a strategy we can use for all the stages to think about building our processor, rather than kind of working instruction by instruction, thinking about the whole processor, what does the instruction do? We can just systematically look at one piece and say, here's what I do for this piece to make this make each instruction work, and kind of write our code stage by stage, which is, I think, more of how the textbook authors thought of building their processor. Some questions about our source B mux or other things with the decode / register read stage. Okay. So given that, I have my corrected version of the processor after instruction decode. So now I have this option to get the RSP value, RSP index, which is 4, I believe, into source B, even if it's not already in the instruction. So then we have the next stage our textbook talks about, which is execute. This is where we perform an ALU operation. And it's also where we deal with condition codes. So I haven't like drawn condition codes yet, but we know that the ALU is what's going to be setting them, because we do an ALU operation, and sometimes it changes their condition codes. And this is also the conceptual part of the processor where textbook authors deal with reading the condition codes and figuring out, is a conditional move going to be taken or not? Is a jump going to be taken or not if it's conditional? So this is where we'll do all that logic. And having them in sort of one part means that, you know, we can think of the condition code registers as living in this stage. Even though, like, of course, writing the condition code registers doesn't actually happen till the end of the cycle because they're registers. So I mentioned, like, reading and using the condition codes. So our textbook authors have this kind of highly abstracted version of, like, there's just a use condition codes operation. But we're going to actually have to implement that in HTLRS. And sort of the simplest design, maybe not the most efficient one, is that we take our secondary opcode, what our textbook calls IFON, which has for conditional jumps and moves, this encoding, like, one value for LE, one value for L, and so on. And we have a MUX, which has the computed result of would a jump be taken or would a move be taken based on that. So for example here, you know, I say if it's the less than index of the secondary opcode that, you know, we get from, say, our conditional move instruction, I take SF ORed with CF and pass that through that index of the MUX and so on. And then I use that to decide whether, for a conditional move, whether into the register file I pass register B as the destination or nothing as the destination. Questions about this conditional move logic? Okay, so as I mentioned earlier, I'm mostly not going to draw the control path, and we'll consider this part of the control path, so it's probably not going to appear in pictures I'm going to show, even though it's going to be something you're going to have to implement probably in next week's lab. So the rest of what the execute stage does is this ALU computation. So the simplest notion is that we think of, like, oh, what does add do? Add adds two numbers together from the registers. So we just hook up the register file to our ALU to do an ALU operation. And same question, for which of these is there a problem? And note that sort of our goal is that if we have an ALU, we use it for the computation of the instruction. We ideally don't, like, have additional adders that, you know, that we only use for one thing when we could have used the ALU. So give you a minute or two to discuss with your neighbors, which of these instructions is this idea set up so far, do I have a problem? Which of these, if I just add stuff, drawing things to my circuit, I'm gonna say, whoops, I wanted to not do one of these lines I just drew. Yes. So the question, did I say doing an operation with addition subtraction with that part of the ALU would be a problem? So I'd say it's a problem if the ALU is not being used and we also have a separate circuit to do an addition, right? That seems pretty wasteful. Okay. And that's what we want to avoid. Yes?
Is that value C going anywhere?
Is that value C going anywhere? Not at the moment. Yes?
So the
question, you're looking for instructions that are using the ALU, but where this would not work?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, who'd like some more time? Not seeing anyone. So who thinks we'd have a problem for nap? Okay. Add. Okay. MR move Q. Okay, a few people. Pop. More people. Call. Many more people. Okay. So let's go through these. So we had pretty good agreement that there's no problem for nop or add. For MR move Q, the MR move Q instruction, well, do we need to do any arithmetic? And the answer is yes, because we have this DRB. So here is, I guess, the value of RB. That's fine. But we also have D, which is val C here. And we want to add them together. So if we want to do that, either we need to add a second adder when the ALU won't be doing anything, which seems very wasteful, or we need to make the ALU do this by taking our val C and somehow hooking it up, which means we need to add a mux and so on to make that work. And this also is going to apply to our other memory instruction, R move Q, memory move instruction, R move Q. So pop. So for pop, if we think of, does pop do any computation? You might say, well, it doesn't, you know, we don't think of it as a computation instruction, but it has to compute a new stack pointer value. And again, this is a case where either we need to have a separate adder or subtractor to do that, or we can use the ALU. And we say, okay, so for pop, we want to compute RSP minus 8. Okay, so can we get RSP? Absolutely. We can read it using source B, which means that our B wire can contain RSP. But then we want to add or subtract, we want to subtract 8. So we can do a subtraction. That's fine. We can subtract, but we can't get 8. Like, 8's not going to be the value of LC. We don't have the constant 8 just sitting around in our pop instructions. And it's not going to be the value of RA because that's just a value of whatever register we're going to overwrite. There's no guarantee that that contains anything in particular. So we need some way of getting 8 into the ALU for that. And if we think of call, we have the same problem. For call, we want to compute RSP plus 8 to, or wait, I have this reversed. For pop, we want to do RSP plus 8. For call, we want to do RSP minus 8, which we're going to do with the same way, but we need to push something on the stack, that's RSP minus 8. Popping something from the stack is RSP plus 8. Okay, so I think we need to add something for MR move Q, pop Q call, and it's going to turn out also R move Q and all the other stack instructions. So questions about my reasoning here? Yes. The question isn't there also a problem because we have to deal with doing addition sometimes and subtraction other times? So drawn on here, but something I didn't emphasize, is that we have some control logic I didn't show that's going to give the ALU an operation signal, add, subtract, and so on. So as long as we set that based on not only, you know, if it's an add or subtract, but if it's like a pop or a push or a call, that should be fine. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah.
I thought MR move Q wouldn't be an issue because, when you said we're just adding a mux.
So the question is, you thought MR move Q wouldn't be an issue because we're adding a mux? So I agree we're adding a mux. The problem is, if I look at what I have drawn in black here, I need to do something to this wire to make put the mux on it. So, you know, I've kind of haven't given myself space for a mux unless I erase part of this wire or draw over it. And that's sort of what I was trying to get. But I agree, yes, we can keep most of our work because we've handled the common case. Other questions, comments, follow-ups? Okay, so that we have our two special cases, and our textbook calls the inputs the ALU, ALUA, and ALUB, and we'll have a mux for, looks like just ALUA A right now. We'll talk later about whether we want a mux for the other when we kind of backtrack from a future stage. So this gives us our execute stage up to the ALU. Okay. So let's go to our next stage, which is the memory stage. So this is where we read or write memory, and there's a new signal introduced here, which our textbook calls valm, which is just the output of the data memory. So if we're reading, it's the value we read, otherwise it's junk. And sort of the simplest notion would be, well, we learned that, say, R remove Q and M remove Q, we use the ALU to compute the address. So we'll just hook up the ALU to the address input. We know that R remove Q, we read from RA, so we'll hook up the value of RA to the data input, which also seems to work for push. So again, question is, I handled the common cases. What are the cases I missed? And note that if you're concerned about, well, some of these instructions read memory, some of them write it, some of them don't do anything. Note that we have our write, and turns out going to ultra turn out our read control signals being set separately. So we'll at least control whether the data memory is reading or writing based on the instruction. Give you a minute or two. Okay, who would like some more time? Okay, a few people. And yeah, the thing you think about is, like, what do these instructions actually do? And we have the two at the end are kind of complicated. Okay, so who thinks that we have a problem with NOP? Okay, who thinks we'd have a problem with R move Q? Okay, a couple people. How about M move Q? More people. POP. Only a handful. And CALL. Okay, a lot of people. Okay, so someone tell me, what was the problem with call? Yeah.
You need to switch the PC to stack, or the PC plus 8
to stack. Yep. Okay, so you need to push the incremented PC to the stack. And if we're pushing something to the stack, it better be going into the data memory. And right now, only a value of a register can go into the data memory. That's not the incremented PC. The incremented PC is this valp thing here. So we need some connection that lets us do that for call. Okay. So that's indeed a problem for call. So some people said that pop would be a problem. Anyone want to explain what's the problem with pop? Yeah, back there?
Same thing as call, but a decremented version of RSP needs to be pushed in.
So you're saying that we needed the decremented version of RSP to be pushed in. So I would say the pop instruction, what goes in the data input is going to be the RA. That's fine. But there's something about the decremented version of RSP. So, what goes in the data input for push would be that, but what goes in the data input for pop doesn't matter, right? Because we aren't writing, sorry. So that doesn't matter here. But you're saying that there's something about the decremented RSP.
Oh, we decrement RSP, but there's no way to complete that operation in 1 cycle.
So you're saying that there's a conflict between decrementing RSP and the rest of what we need to do in the instruction, which is,
like, you know, store the decremented version back in the RSP.
So you're telling me that part of what we need to do in instruction is store the decremented version into RSP, or incremented version into RSP for pop. Another thing we need to do is write the value from the stack to the register. And if we look carefully at what call does, there is a conflict here. It's a little more subtle, that we take memory at the old RSP, and that goes into the, so like if we have, say, pop RAX, that's what goes into RAX, but the RSP, the new RSP, is going to be RSP plus 8. So the conflict here is that this value here is going to be RSP plus 8 for a pop, which is not where you want to read memory. You want to read memory at the original RSP. So our solution is going to be that we're going to have a bypass here. And another mux. And the same thing is going to apply to return. So we end up with a mux to get val p as input, and a mux to, in the case of pop and return, to get the old stack pointer, not the new one we computed, that we're going to need later on because we need to write it to the stack pointer again, but with the old one as far as accessing memory goes. Some questions about what I added to the circuit? Okay, so that's where I'll finish up today. So next time we'll talk about the two remaining stages and what we need to do for them, as well as a special case with IR move queue.